really?
Yeah.
Wow.
True freestyle intro.
No, it's not coming.
Oh.
Put it to the lid. It's not flashing.
I didn't put this on. Okay. Right. So, but I said to her that you should know that that evil and a bad lifestyles are overrated. You know, it's overrated because if it's so much fun, you know, how come like the epitome of fun, people in Hollywood, they look like they're having so much fun. You know, why are they, you know, commit suicide and divorces and all of these, why are they, all these problems? Like when you see them on TV, they have a big smile on their face. So it's overrated because if a person follows a lifestyle and wants to present himself as being happy, nobody wants to present themselves as a failure. The facade that they create is one of happiness. But it is it's not a proof of anything. So the truth of the matter is, the more a person follows the enjoyments that result from the instincts, the worse he is. Because he attains frustration. So that's what the Rambam means, that they're not mafsid. That they're not mafsid legamri. It's not a waste, because in terms of Olam Hazeh, they're better off. I mean, it's like a crazy kind of paradox. You know, the more you chase the enjoyments, the worse, the less enjoyable they are. And the less you chase them, the more enjoyable they are. But the fact is, that's true. Even though it's a paradox, and that's why everybody gets fooled by it, but it's a paradox that really is true. You know, that's why, I mean, we mentioned that Shlomo Melch says with Mammon that Ohev Mammon Lo Yispa. So a person that loves money is not satisfied. So what's the implication from that? That if you don't love it, you could be satisfied. Whereas he's not saying, it's an interesting thing, he's not saying that there's no benefit that you can't reap from money. That's not what he's saying. He's saying there is a satisfaction of money, but it's only to those who don't love it. So it's the more you go after that type of a thing, the less satisfaction you get. It's an interesting thing. So that's what I'm saying. That the Torah holds you back does two things. It causes you to withdraw from the physical enjoyments, and it places you in the intellectual enjoyments. So if a person follows the Torah, even if he doesn't attain the second goal, that he doesn't get to the, he doesn't arrive at the area of the enjoyments, of the true enjoyments, he still is removed from the physical enjoyment. And that's a benefit. Then he's going to be able to enjoy his life that he has here. Yeah.
Wouldn't this guy naturally, since he's not getting anything with Shema, wouldn't he naturally be going for something for the physical enjoyment? Wouldn't he be going after that paradox somewhere within the system?
Not necessarily. It doesn't mean the energy is satisfying himself in some area. It is in some area. It's true. Some psychological type of satisfaction, but it's not necessarily that a person that's is indulging in the physical enjoyments. He is, in other words, he's getting some kind of satisfaction in some area, but if he's following halacha, it has to be he's living a life, an even tempered life. He can't be living a extreme life of tithe and be following halacha. You know, so his energy is going into some area. There's some kind of fantasy, whatever it is, that he's a good person. You know, whatever it is, whatever kind of goal he has, but he's not putting his energy into the tithes. You know, it's a more refined kind of involvement that he has, and that allows you to enjoy life more. A person that's more involved in the tithes, he has less enjoyment. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Are psychological pleasures the same kind of principle? The more you indulge, the less.
No, see, psychological is not that way, because the thing is that, and I think the Rambam has this later on actually, but the Rambam talks about it, because the psychological enjoyments are not that way, because are not totally that way. Because the psychological, as you know, it's enjoyment the person has in his mind. Like, let's say a person's trying to achieve some kind of goal, you know. So what happens is, in his mind, you know, he has different ideas of what he wants to be, and a lot of the enjoyment occurs in his mind. What he thinks, how people are looking at him, you know, he's whatever, he's attained a position of power, whatever it is. And the psychological enjoyments could go much further. Because physical enjoyment, a person enjoys, let's say, whatever, some kind of taiva, right? Some kind of nice, good meal. I mean, so that's it. It's limited. I mean, it's limited to the experience. The psychological enjoyments go way beyond that because the person has fantasy and he starts to think how great this would be, how great that would be. You know, so that enjoyment is, there's frustration there too, but you can go much further with it. You know, you can go much further. So, I mean, ultimately, it's going to be frustrating too, because ultimately, you also can't totally satisfy your energy in that area. But it's a much further route. That's why a person can go his whole life and with a certain fantasy and a certain goal, and he still is running after it. Okay.
So say you have like Donald Trump and like somebody from the Hamonam that just they keep chasing after a physical pleasure and it keeps giving them what they want from it. So they're going to be more dissatisfied?
I would think so, yeah. Because like look at people like, let's say, a person in Hollywood, right, where they really have all of the, you know, physical tivas, right, partying, all of this, right, you see that they burn out much quicker because, you know, there's a limit. I mean, how much enjoyment can you get from that? And you keep driving yourself, it's a very limited thing. Donald Trump has, you know, in his imagination, there's an unlimited thing that he can go, billions, you know, whatever it is. I mean, new buildings, new things, you know, because a lot of it is occurring in his mind, in his imagination. So he can go much, much longer on that kind of a route. So that's the thing. So the Torah keeps you out of the area which is the most frustrating, which you can burn out the quickest. It keeps you out of there. It's true. It withdraws you from that area. So therefore, the enjoyment that you get is going to be satisfying enjoyment. Right? But he says the second thing is, it's that's one point, but mutav lahem bekach, it's certainly better for them that they should do this, that they have the potential to arrive at the true level. That's the greatest thing. That's the greatest reason to keep the mitzvahs. Okay? Okay, good. Alrighty, so that's that. So I guess we're up to the next section, okay? Mimah shat tzarech l'das shadiri chachamim aleihem hashalom nechaku bahem b'nei adam u'shalosh kitos. Okay, so there are three groups of people, three opinions regarding Divrei Chachamim. Okay, so okay. What's that?
Aleihem Hashalom.
Aleihem Hashalom. Yeah.
What does that mean?
Oh. It's like, you know, Aleihem Shalom, like, you know, you say somebody that's passed away.
Oh, so he's talking about Chacham that died?
Chacham, Aleihem Shalom, right. Okay, if the Chacham of the former generations. It's the authors of these Dvarim, of Midrashim, right? I mean, the reason why he's going into this, I mean, is because the thing is that in the previous thing, he brought the different opinions of people with regard to what is Schar Mitzvah. And the groups that he introduced supported themselves with Chazal, with Midrashim. Like the group that said it's Olam Haba, so they have different Midrashim to support them. So now he wants to show what are the different ways that a person could have an opinion of... What are the different groups with regard to how they evaluate the Midrashim? You know, what are the different ways of looking at Midrashim, and what's the true thing? But he wants to go into that because the thing is that even though he showed that the Schar Mitzvah cannot be some future reward, that he showed it has to be the mitzvah itself. But now the question is, so what do you do with the Midrashim? What do you do with the Divrei Chachamim that these groups use to support themselves? Because they brought proofs from the Chachamim that the Schar is some future reward. Okay, so how do we look at Midrashim? Okay, so he says, with regard to Midrashim, there are three opinions. Okay? So he said, Akar Rishona, Vehem Rov, Ashinif Gashti, Imahem, okay, so the greatest group that contains the most largest number of believers in this group is Mevinim Osam Kepashtam Veinam Masbirim Osam Klal. Okay, so they accept the Midrashim according to its plain meaning, okay, without any interpretation. V'nasu etzlam kol ha'nimnos mechuyvei ha'mitzios. And in this group, to them, any impossibility becomes a necessary postulate. Things that are impossible, that a normal person would consider impossible, to them, based on Midrashim, they say must be. V'lo asu kein, elam machma sichlusam, v'chachmos, okay, they say this only for one reason, because of their sichlus b'chachmos. Okay, their ignorance, v'richukim min hamadayim, and their distance from knowledge. Okay, so he's saying basically they're ignorant of. It would seem they're ignorant of knowledge. You know, they have a lacking in the area of knowledge, and therefore they accept these midrashim literally. And they do not have. There's a lot of. I don't know. He seems to repeat himself a lot here, but I'm sure he's saying something, right? They don't have the perfection to notice this themselves, to correct this themselves. And there is nobody else that could correct them. Okay? So, I mean, I don't know if we could, you know, it would be interesting to, he seems to be saying something here that, right, that they're, what's responsible for their misinterpretation of Chazal is their own insufficiency in knowledge, is their own lacking in knowledge. If they had if they had more knowledge, they would know immediately that what they're saying doesn't make sense. Okay? Ulechein choshvim heim she'ein kavanas chachamim b'chol ma'imareihem ha'mechukakim elamah she'evinu heim mehem. Okay, therefore they think that the only intent of Chazal is exactly what they think. Basically, just exactly what the words say. Ushahim kepshutam. All right, exactly what's written. V'afa pishi yesh bepashti mitzas tvarim min hazaros. Even though there's certain things that in the plain meaning is so strange. Ad kedeshim tisperenu kepashto lahaman ha'am koshken lichidehem hayu nidhamim bekach. Okay, it's so strange, the ideas contained in the Midrashim on the surface are so strange that if you would explain it to the Hamonam in its plain way, Kol Shekein Liyichideihem, I'm not sure exactly, Hayu Nidhamim Bekach, they would be astounded. V'omer Mehech Efcher Sheyeh Ba'olam Adam, Shemedamet Dvarim, and they would say, how is it possible that a person could believe in such a thing, in these things? V'choshev Shehem Dvarim Nechonim, and not only to believe in them, but to believe that they are sensible ideas. V'chol Shekein Sheyimtzu Chaim Beinov, and not only that, but that they should actually be happy with these ideas. They accept them readily. So he's saying, Akadei. You say this idea is so strange. if you explain to Hamanam, I mean, I guess, because the Hamanam, he's saying most of the people are this way, so what do you mean? What do you mean if you explain it to Hamanam, they would say, how could such a thing be? You know what I mean? But I think he probably means, Lahamanam means that a person that would not be under this influence. In other words, a regular person that doesn't know anything, right? No type of sophistication, but he's not subject to the influence of these forces, right? He wasn't brought up with certain prejudices. Just a regular person. If you explain a regular person these ideas, minusing Al Chazal, no, tell him where you got it from. They say this is insane, right? But now when you introduce the fact that it's Maimar Chazal, this becomes perfectly logical to them. Okay, so he's saying that to the mind, these ideas themselves, it's the influence of the fact that the Chazal said it, right? Nobody in the right mind would believe the thing by itself, but because of this situation, the Chazal were the ones that authored this. They insist it must be true, and it becomes something that's perfectly logical to them. Okay. V'hakarazu hamiskena. This what do you call it? Impoverished group, intellectually impoverished. Rachmanas al sichlusam lefi shehem roman wesachachamim. They raise the chachamim according to their idea, ve'inam elamashpilim, but really they're degrading the chachamim. Betachlis hashiflis, and they give them the ultimate degradation. Ve'inam margishim bekach, but they don't know this, as they think that they're loyal to the chachamim and they're really defending their honor of the Chachamim by insisting it's true, but in the contrary, they're really degrading the Chachamim to the height of degradation. Okay, V'chai Hashem, ki akar hazu ma'avadim hadar ha-Torah. They're destroying the glory of the Torah, u'machshichim zara, and they darken the light. V'osim Torah Hashem behepech ha-mechuvim ba. And they are, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know what he's saying, it's like, it reminds me, you know, that the idea of tefillah, that what the Rambam says with regard to tefillah, when we say Hakela Gadola Gibor V'Hanora, so those were words that Moshe Rabbeinu said, but we don't know the idea that corresponds to those, because to us it seems it's, you know, like almost attributes of God. So we don't know the true idea that corresponds to those words. So therefore we should just have in mind what Moshe meant. So the Rambam quotes a Medrash, quotes a Maimar Chazal, that a person was adding on to tefillos, you know, adding on different attributes. And one of the Chazal told him, how much more are you going to degrade God, you know? So the idea being that your praise is only relative to what your knowledge is. In other words, if your knowledge is so small, what you think is a praise is actually a degradation. It's like he gives an example: if a person would praise a great king by telling me he has many copper coins, I mean, to this person that's a praise. That's a great thing, but what the king really is far below what he is. So over here, the people really, because of their false idea, they really are intending to remain loyal to the Chachamim, and they're really following the Chachamim, but in what they think is really an accurate description. But it comes out that they're doing the exact opposite. They're really destroying the Torah, unknowingly. In other words, it's an interesting thing. I mean, a person has to be careful. You know, people, run out to do things, but it's dependent on your knowledge. You know, if you can intend to accomplish a certain thing, but if the idea you're starting off with is false, you're gonna end up doing the exact opposite. You know, so The people think that they're really praising the Chachamim, but they are, since their idea is actually the exact opposite, they're doing the exact opposite of what they're attempting to do. You know? Right, so that's what he's saying. They're really making the Torah Hashem exactly the opposite of what was intended. L'fi she'Hashem amar al-chachmas Torahso asher yishmun es kol ha-chukim ha-ele. Okay, because it says, this is a pasuk Rabbi Chaik quotes a lot. I mean, the Rambam quotes it. Asher yishmun es ha-chukim ha-ele, that the nations will hear the knowledge, the laws of the Torah, and they'll say, what a great nation this is, the Jews are, with what unbelievable system of law they have. Okay? V'akarazu darshin mishpatei divrei chachamim asher im yishma'un ha'amim. They explain the words of the chachamim, that if somebody would hear such a thing, they'd say, rak am sachav navan hagaya katan hazeh. They'd say the exact opposite. What a foolish nation this is. Right? Let me just get it. Dvarim Dalet Vav. See, it says in Pasuk, "Shmartem v'asisem ki yichach masuchem uvinasuchem." You should keep them and do the laws. Ki yichach masuchem, this is your knowledge, uvinasuchem le'eni yo'amen. Okay. Asher yishmeun eis kol ha'chukim o'ele, who will hear these laws v'amru, and they'll say, rak am chacham v'navon ha'gaya gadozeh. What a knowledgeable and understanding great nation this is. When they hear your laws, that's what they'll conclude. Right? So the Rambam says that when people hear this, the average person will hear this, they'll conclude the exact opposite. That what a foolish nation this is. Right? So I mean, maybe it's an obvious point, but this Rabbi Chait said on this pasuk that this is not, you know, the pasuk is not giving you a prediction. You know what I mean? It's not telling you that God's predicting that in the future the nations will hear it and they will say, wow, what a great nation is this is. It's not a prediction, it's a barometer. Now, as the pasuk is telling you that the laws are such that if a person would hear it, he would be astounded and amazed by it. So it means to say, if your understanding of the Torah is such that were you to explain it to an average person in the street, and he would say, oh, that's crazy, then you know that that is not the Torah. That what you're saying is not what the Torah intended. Because whatever the Torah intended, it has to be such that if you would tell the average person in the street, he'd say, wow, that's unbelievable. But if you would extract the opposite reaction, then you could know for sure that your idea is not the idea of the Torah. That's the Pasuk telling. It's telling a way of knowing what is authentic Torah and what is not authentic. Anything that's authentic is something that the average guy who knows nothing about it, you explain it to him, he'll go, wow, that's authentic. But anything that would extract the opposite reaction, that's your thing, it's not Torah. If you explain the thing to them, explain an idea in Torah to them, right? And a person listens to it and says, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, a normal person. In other words, not a guy with prejudice, but a guy, straight thinker, regular guy, knows nothing about it. You explain an idea to him from Torah. And he goes, that's crazy.
If we know
that's not Torah.
We said that a woman who cheats on her husband gets, everyone gets killed.
Right.
Is that,
as you explain how they explain an idea in Torah, because right? Ram's talking here like that the large groups of people accept the midrashim literally, so they read a midrash in Ein Yaakov and they say crazy seven-headed monsters, and they accept that literally, that this is the real thing, right? So the Ram says that and they praise the Chachamim for this. This is actually lowering the Chachamim, because if you go and tell this to the average person in the street, they say, this is insane. How do you believe in such things? Right? So you could know for sure that is not Torah. Right? So, but if you... But what would, you know... That's what he's saying. In other words, anything that a guy is going to say to the average intellect, to just a basic intellect, you present, it means the idea is crazy. It means that is a way to tell if your idea is something that people naturally look at and say, there's something wrong with that. You could see that's not an idea. I mean, how do you know when a person's learning, right? Why you learn with somebody else, right? Because you're bouncing ideas off the other person. If you see that you're saying a thing and it's just, you start to get the feeling like, maybe something wrong here, right? I mean, that's why you bounce your ideas off of other people, because you're using their intellects. So a lot of times you could have a crazy idea and you don't notice it, right? So that's what he's saying. Right? You see, that's true. A lot of times, you know, people have these crazy things. They promote these crazy fantasies that they have in the name of Torah. And goyim hear about it. They look at the Jews and say, this is crazy. That's the phenomena that the Torah is talking about. Right? But then you have ideas that really are rational things, and you explain it to a person who knows nothing about Torah. He goes, wow, that's an unbelievable thing. Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Viharbe Shaosin Kane Hadarshanim Amevinila Amashaina Mevinam Hem Atzman. And this is the, you know, the normal course of events that the people that are Darshanim, they explain to the Am things that they themselves have no knowledge of. Umiyitem v'shasku kivin she'inam mevinim. It would be better that they should be quiet, since they don't have knowledge, they don't understand it. Miyitein acherish tachrishun v'tihi lachem l'chachma. Right? If a person's silence is considered like wisdom. As a person doesn't have knowledge, there's a certain level of understanding where a person knows that he doesn't know the area, and he's quiet. You know, that itself is shows a level of understanding where a person knows when to be quiet. He senses he doesn't understand the area. Oh hayelahem lomar ein anu yodem ma ratzu chachamim bidvarim elu, or say you don't know. We don't know. In other words, there's such a thing as saying we don't know. I mean, that's not, you know, the people consider that like, you know, a degradation or something that you can't say. It's you know, it's not, you know, but there's nothing wrong with the person saying he doesn't know. I mean, that's something people hardly ever utter, but... So both things, people, when they don't understand, they, you know, they refuse to be quiet. You know, they feel they know, and therefore they're very quick to explain to others. And also, people are not willing to say, I don't know. I simply don't know. You know? They feel, you know, there's people that are in a certain position with regard to the nation, they feel they must know. You know, you find like people that have a certain leadership position, they feel they must know. Like there's a thing that if we have to know this, we can't be ignorant of this, you know? And that's wrong. That's, you know, a person has to recognize when he doesn't know. Whether he should know or he shouldn't, I mean, that's irrelevant. Right? But they feel like a certain, I think people feel like a certain coercion to that we must be, we have to be loyal to the Chama. We have to, like you find, people defend, want to defend. I mean, that's an emotion. People want to defend their thing. You know, well, they feel the Torah is right or whatever it is, and they feel they must defend it. So to be quiet is like an admission that that it's wrong, or that the chachamim are not, or to say I don't know. You know, they feel they must defend their religion. That's a powerful emotion, you know. But that is that's a false thing. That's a false thing, because what you're saying is, when you say, I think it's a very common thing. People feel they have to defend. Like somebody insults Rashi, let's say. We have to, you know, let's say there's a Rashi on Chumash. It doesn't make sense. You hear people talking, like, let's say, non-religious people, and they say, this is stupid. What kind of stupidity? You come along, no, you must defend it. You know, they're insulting Rashi, and it's not right. You know? And that is a thing. And therefore, people get in all kinds of debates, and they themselves don't know what the Rashi means. But they're going to, you know, say something just to make sure that Rashi's not insulted. You know, the Rashi doesn't go unanswered. You know, and it's not a good thing. I mean, it doesn't work out, because unless you know what Rashi means, you're not defending him. You're making it worse, because you're going to give your crazy idea, and then they'll have more basis to say that this whole religion is crazy. But why do people do it? People feel they must defend it.
That's what people feel very guilty, like, for them to open up a Rashi and say, like, you don't make any sense right now. Like, that probably hurts to say that.
Yeah. It hurts to say it. And that is, they defend it because they believe it too. And that is, when they hear people making fun of it and saying this is stupid, the reason why they defend it is because they agree with those people. They themselves, there's a part of them that also thinks this is crazy. So therefore, I hear somebody saying it, they got to rush in and defend it. Cold caller?
Answer it?
Probably near the office, like, probably some of the office folks.
And does it ring in the office too?
Well, only answer it if you would want to speak to that person. You know, sometimes you answer, you go, oh, God, why did I answer this? what do you call it, caller ID?
Yeah, but
we don't recognize
718-337-6419.
If I don't recognize the number, I don't answer it. That's my. But anyways, right? That's the reason why people defend these things, is because of one reason. Because they really have the same complaint. So when they hear the person, you know, complaining about Rashi or looking at it stupidly, right? They themselves agree, and therefore they have to, like, immediately come in and defend Rashi. You see, but really there's no need for it, because you're not hurting Rashi, and the fact that people are ignorant, people are always ignorant. So, now if you have something to say, if you have a true idea to impart to the people, it has nothing to do with Rashi. It's simply, if a person is ignorant and you have the knowledge, so you could inform him of the knowledge to help that person. But there's no necessity to be upset and to be defending Rashi's honor. It's, and if you don't have the knowledge, so then you're just as ignorant. So what are you defending Rashi? Okay? Okay. So, but so that's the Rambam saying, that silence, you know, sometimes just be silent, or say you don't know. And there's no, it's not going to harm the Chachamim. That will not harm the Chachamim. Chachamim are fine without you. Okay? But that's what we said before, that they think they're trying to help the Chachamim, but instead they're really causing harm. They're lowering the Chachamim. Okay, v'darshim b'fnei hamon b'drashas brachos uperek chelik v'zulasam k'pshutam mila b'mila. They explain word for word, every word, according to plain pshat. Okay, and that's their opinion. That's the way the chachamim are meant it, and that's how they interpret the midrashim. Okay, literally. Okay, so that's the first cut. Okay, second cut. Kara shnia. Gam heim rabam. These are also a great number of people. V'heim osam shiro divrei chachamim. They they see the words of the Chachamim, Oshamu v'havinuhu kepashtu. Okay? And they also interpret the words literally. V'chashvu she'ein kavanas Chachamim bekach. Ela mashmos poshtei hadvarim. Okay? So, and their idea is that the intent of the Chachamim is exactly what the words say. Now, as the Chachamim meant literally whatever is in the Midrashim. Okay? L'chein zilzulubo. And therefore they degrade them. Like the people that you hear talking and degrading Rashi. That's the other cut. Right? So you have the cut that defends Rashi, word for word. And then you have the cut that reads Rashi and goes, this guy's obviously way out. Okay? V'ganuhu, v'chashvu, they degrade them, and they maintain lemuzar, ma'ashenu muzar. Okay, they hold to be strange that which really is not strange, but in their eyes, right, it's strange. V'yaligo al divrei chachamim le'itim krovos. Okay, and they insult, they mock the words of the chachamim. I'm not sure, le'itim krovos, from near times. Maybe the former chachamim of the former ages, they mock the choshvim shem yoser nevonim mehem v'yoser zakai v'raya, and they maintain that they are more understanding than the chachamim. They consider the chachamim like fools. V'shem aleihem asham pesiim chasrei das sichlim b'chol hametzius. Okay, they consider Chachamim very ignorant and just foolish, and you know, like old wives' tales, like you know, En Yaakov. Like these tales, legends, these are foolish things. Ve'ena masigim shum davar klal. They don't understand anything. Ve'rov mi shenafal b'machshava zu. Okay, there are many that apply to this kind of thinking. Osam hatonim shehem rofim. Many of those that maintain this kind of thought are doctors. Okay. V'achozim b'mishpati hamazalos. V'ahozim b'mishpati hamazalos. I don't know, astrology?
Is rofim doctors or like religious doctors, like religious healers?
Could be. Let's see. Right, I know what you mean. Like faith healers, that type of thing. Benidfas, he has a note. Benidfas, hamasiyachsim lechachmas harfua. Beino nacha. Shigam arofim enam. The kavanas ravina shigam arofim enam. Oh, yeah, maybe what you're saying. Because I guess in the other translation it says those that have the knowledge of medicine, and karpach is saying eino nacha. That's not what it means. Kavanas ravina shigam arofim enam. They're not even rofim. Maybe it's like you're saying, right? They're like, you know, imposters, like these faith healers. Whatever it is, right? He's saying there are people that, here, lefi sheheim, lefi dimyonam, according to their own idea, imagination, pikhim chachamim, they're great deep thinkers, philosophim, philosophers. Okay, they have a high opinion of themselves. I mean, you know. You can get an idea of, we have a counterpart today, you know, like people that think, you know, pseudo-intellectuals, people that think that they're big chachamim, you know, most people around, but, no, I mean, you know, there are people that have, like, sophisticated, you know, they talk, they know how to, they have certain, you know, they read a certain amount of philosophy and different things, and they feel that they could speak intelligently about everything. And they feel like they're, you know, superior sort of person, you know.
So maybe it's like Galen, like how we're
saying. Like Galen, right.
Advanced in one area.
That's true. Advanced in one area is one case, right. Where a person is advanced in one area, he feels that he's an expert in every area. That he somehow could speak on every area. That was Galen, right. But beyond that, there's also, even if a person is not advanced in one area, a person, you know, a lot of times people just develop this kind of, you know, general knowledge where they could fool people and present themselves as real intellectuals, and they're not really, they don't really know. Okay? Yeah. So he says, "Vehem yoser." Oh, no, so he says, "Kama rechokim he mina nushus etzel hafilosvim haemtiim." How far are they from anushos etzel hafil? How far are they from man? I guess from perfection. Relative to the true philosophers, how far are they from real perfection? Okay, there's no comparison, but they place themselves in this position, and they, okay, and they degrade the chachamim. Okay, so he says, "Vehem yoser sichlim." Now this is interesting. He says, "Vehem yoser sichlim min hakat harishona, v'yoser psiim." He says they are more foolish than the first kat. Right. And they're greater fools. Vehem kat arura, their cursed kat, shis partsu klape anoshim, rame hamaila, that they go against the highest level of men, shikvar noda chachmasam etzel chachamim, that their knowledge, the knowledge of the chachamim is already known to other wise people. They're known to be wise men. Okay, the Chachamim. And they go against them and just dismiss them. Ve'elu hechshir es atzmam. If they would prepare themselves, if they would, properly learn themselves, b'madoyim, if they would learn sciences, ad sheyadu, eich kosvim es advarma binyanim ha'kiyim, to the point where they would know what the Chachamim mean when they speak of this philosophic areas. Ukiyetz b'hem min amadayim lahamon l'chachamim v'yisku la'atzmam es ha'chelek ha'maisi shel ha'filosofia ki az hayom mevinim, and if they had ethical perfection, okay, ki az hayom mevinim es im chachamim alo, then they'd be able to objectively evaluate, are these people chacham or not, if they had some kind of intellectual and ethical perfection, right? Okay, yeah.
How is that greater mistake than maybe
thinking
things that are impossible?
That's a greater mistake, right? Now, he's saying these guys are bigger fools. Well, on the surface, it seems like, you know, when he described the first guys, it seems like are the greatest fools. They just believe anything that they hear. And they could say the stupidest thing as long as it's written down in print. These guys at least are a little critical. I mean, okay, they're insulting the Chacham, fine, but they're not going to believe that which is impossible. But he says the opposite. These guys are bigger fools. That's the question. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're asking.
That's right. That's what you're asking. That's a good question. Yeah.
But these guys think that like the Chachamim weren't as smart as they're like the ancients or something, and we're like the modern, you know, scientists and stuff. Is that who these guys are?
These guys are the second cut?
Yeah.
Second cut are like the people that read stuff in the Open Up the Sansino, read these Midrashim, yeah, and say these guys are superstitious fools. They didn't know it, right? You want to see a devil, put flour in your room, you pull the shades, and then in the morning you're going to see chicken feet, and that's the devil.
And they laugh at it. They say,
well, yeah, they laugh at it. Yeah, this is, they, you know, offer this as comedy. You know, these are the, could you, you know, there's a primitive group here that believes in this stupidity. Look at this.
So maybe that's why they're worse, because they're not even receptive to the words of the Chacham, since they just assume, they start off with this assumption that it's worthless in the first place.
Right, okay.
The first guy, they are listening to the Chachamim, they just don't know how to learn.
Right, okay.
Here, they're not even at the stage of learning, because they're not receptive to it.
They're not receptive. So the first guys are receptive. Right, okay. But what about the fact, and what about the fact that, so you're saying the first guys are receptive to knowledge, they just don't know what the Chachamim are saying. And these guys are not even, won't even listen to the Chachamim.
Right. And that's due to their ego, too.
That's due to their ego. Right.
think they're closer to the truth.
Closer to the truth.
Because if you sat them down and showed them that, no, that's not what they mean this and that, other people will be, no, that's not what it means literal. At least they don't have.
You're saying they're close to the truth because they can't accept the impossible. They're not going to accept.
Right, they just think what they're saying is stupid. Maybe they don't know. They don't know what he means. What they mean.
What,
if you sat him down and told them the idea, they'd be quicker to accept it than a cop that thinks that no, that this is literally what it means. You can't argue with the cop that thinks it's literal because they're not looking for any explanation. At least they're asking on them.
Right.
Well, that's probably not what he's basing it on. He's basing it on what their status is now. And based on that, if you're just going to continue like that, if you have both groups without any of your influence just continuing on by themselves, the cod that believes everything the Klum said are better off than the cod that doesn't believe the Klum said. Because based on what they believe, they're thinking, they're doing everything based on their own ego. They're saying, I know better than these guys, so I'm just going to do whatever I want. This mitzvah doesn't make sense. It doesn't apply now. I'm going to push it out to the side. If they're using all their rules of logic, then they could just use everything to survive the Chum. While on the other hand, at least they have some basis for their halacha. At least they...
They got lucky.
Yeah, but I'm saying they might have fell into it, but that's a direct result of what their philosophy is.
Right. In other words, what's their thing? The second group, their thing is that why are they rejecting the Chacham? And as we're looking at it, that the second group has knowledge. They're saying, hey, right? Why are we asking this question that, one second, the second group should be better? Because we're saying, one second, the second group sees there's crazy things here. And they're saying these things are crazy. And whereas the first group is not admitting that. So on that score, it would seem the second group is more knowledgeable. They're not going to accept the crazy thing. Right? Correct? But the only thing is that the second group also, if they're so knowledgeable, the second group also insists on interpreting it literally. In other words, the second group... Is the second group justified? That's the question. Now, is the second group justified? I think this is along the lines of what you were saying, Fine. Is the second group justified in... They are justified in saying these things can't be. But are they justified in saying that the Chachamim are crazy? Is that conclusion justified? And if not, why are they making that conclusion? Now, if they're reading a thing that they know, is they're not going to accept. They say, this is false statements. Right? But now, the other thing that they're doing is, as a result of that... They're saying these people are nuts. They're primitive fools. Are they justifying that conclusion? That's the question.
Yeah, it seems like then that the arrogance comes first, and then it just takes the form of like an intelligent point.
Intelligent point.
Just really using that point just to
right.
make themselves feel great.
In other words, if they're not justified in forming that conclusion, why are they forming it? Right? Because you could equally say, one second, this is crazy. Now, I don't know, are these guys such fools? Let's see. Maybe they meant something else, right? But they know they don't do that. They immediately say, look at Rashi, simpleton, idiot, right? Why do they do that? So they do that because of their arrogance, because that's not a justified thing. And if you look, you look at who the Chachamim are, that's not a justified conclusion to say that they have the whole Talmud, all halacha, all these things, and then it comes to this. They're just total fools. I mean, they're just idiots. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. That's not the first conclusion you'd make. You'd look further into it. So why are they so happy to conclude this? It's because of their arrogance. It's not a rational thing. Now, as if it was a rational thing, fine. So then they are more rational than the first group. The first group is just accepting stupidity, and they're saying, oh, we can't accept impossibilities. Right, but what they're doing is they want to conclude that the Chachamim are fools. That's an arrogant thing. So the Rambam is saying that arrogance puts them in a position which is lower than the first group, because in terms of true knowledge, do they have the true knowledge? Do they really know? Do they have the understanding, the ideas, the underlying ideas that are contained here? No. So in terms of true knowledge, they don't have the true knowledge. They don't understand really the ideas behind the concepts, Right? They're just asking questions, good questions, fine. But they don't have the ideas. Right? So, but in terms of their arrogance, that they do have. That the other cut does not have. Right? So the other cut is making a mistake too. But the mistake of the first cut is that they really are driven by their arrogance, and therefore they're concluding the Chachamim are fools. And what I'm saying, that makes them worse. The fact that they are governed by their arrogance. And that's, if you look into it, that's an important point. Because that's really, if you look at any thinker, the first thing a person needs in order to gain chachma is humility. I mean, that's you see in Pirkei Avos, and you see that not only in our system, but Plato says that that why am I better? He says, if you read all of my stuff, he says, you see, I only ask questions, I don't really know anything. So you'll ask, why am I? So what's the difference between me and the people that that I'm questioning? They also have shown that the people in the Hamonam have no knowledge. But I myself am saying I have no knowledge. Right? So why am I better than them? So we both are ignorant. Says, the only difference is I'm ignorant, but I know I'm ignorant. But they think they know. So a person that is arrogant can't really start to gain knowledge. Because in order to gain knowledge, the underlying premise, the first premise has to be that I don't know. But if I know something, then it doesn't make sense to study. Right? So then what I'm saying, that the humility is a precondition for knowledge. So if a person is a totally arrogant person, he can never gain knowledge. Right? So therefore, that cut is the worst. Because at least the first cut, if you'll show them, one second, this is not really what the Chachamim meant. They don't have an arrogant thing. They just feel that they're defending the Chachamim. Okay, they have some emotion, but they're defending the Chachamim. But if you'd show them, one second, this is not what the Chachamim meant. This is what they meant. Oh. They could see it. But the second group is a different story, because they maintain that they are the ultimate in knowledge. They maintain that the Chachamim are nothing. And they have a sense of arrogance. So even if you'd show them the true thing, you'd have to overcome that sense of arrogance. That arrogance is an impediment to understanding. They're not looking for knowledge. That's a worse. That is the worst possible impediment. That's what I'm saying. That's the worst impediment. That's why the Kachni is worse.
Seems like you'd see a difference if you showed them a chazal that says, well, any crazy nonsensical thing that we wrote is not to be taken literally. So the first group is going to now be in conflict, and they're going to know
what they're going to do.
And they're going to rethink about things. And then the second group is just going to still say, oh, they're just trying to cover it up.
You try to argue with the second group, those people that make fun, very difficult. Like, oh, come on, you just throw words in there. This isn't what they meant. No, these guys... You know what I mean? That's always their thing. Yeah, you could say anything. You're just trying to very resistant because they want to believe that these guys, this is nothing. They want to dismiss the system. I say, yeah, it's definitely true. It's very difficult to argue with these people. Even if you show them a true idea. Who says that's what he meant? Right? That's immediately what they say. That's a big thing. It's true. That's why they're really, that's why they're much worse. They can't progress. There is what? All right, we're taking up the Gemara. Lefichach, Ein Danin. The point is in the Mishnah. Therefore, this is a continuation of the idea of Halanas Hadin. Dine Maman is Gomer Bobiyom. See, the Mishnah said, Dine Maman is Gomer Bobiyom. On Dine Maman, you can conclude Bobiyom. Bobiyom means on the same day that you convene. So a case, theoretically, you don't have to, obviously, because... case can go on longer if they're not in agreement yet. They don't have to rush. There's no requirement that they have to be finished within a certain amount of time. But let's say it's clear to them and they want to conclude on the same day. So Dine Mamonos, they can conclude Gemar Din Bobiyom. They can conclude on the same day Bein L'Schus Bein L'Chova, whether for Schus or Chov. Dine Nefashos, Gomer Bobiyom L'Schus. Dine Nefashos, they can be Gomer for Schus. That is, if they find for acquittal, they have majority for acquittal, they say, okay, gemar din. In fact, they're not supposed to continue because really they want to acquit, if possible. So as soon as there's a majority for acquittal, they're going to conclude it, and that's it, pronounce the verdict. Once you pronounce the verdict, as we've learned, cannot be overturned. But it means that once he's found, we did the Gemara, Naki Vitzadik Al Tarog, that even if the Bezdin is aware that they made a mistake, or somebody points out to them, it doesn't matter, it cannot be overturned. Unless it's for a mistake which is called Tzedukah Modimbo, that it's something which is so obvious, it's openly in the Torah, that's not considered to be a valid psak. It doesn't have the status of a psak. Anyways, the Mishnah is telling us then that Dinei Nefashos Gomrin Bo B'Yom L'Schus U'B'Yom Shel Acharav L'Chova, and on the following day L'Chova. That is, if it's for conviction, the main thing you need to know is they cannot convict him on the same day. But they can convict him on the next day. Basically, what's the simple understanding is, that what? You need more time to deliberate. It's called Halonas Adin. Alright? Dinei Nefashos. So we go to the Rambam here in Perek Yud Beis Hilchos Sanhedrin. He gives you an overview in one halacha, one lengthy halacha. He gives you an overview of the entire procedure from start to finish. You take a look towards about more than halfway through that Rambam. He says, "Imatzu lo schus." This is after poskim lo schus. Imatzu lo schus. If they found him a schus, that is, they came up with a defense that acquittal for acquittal purposes. Patru, they acquit him. V'yim lo matzu lo schus. And if they did not find a schus, osrin oso ad l'macha. So they keep him detained until macha. It's more than that, you see. It's more than just simply saying, okay, we adjourn, we'll come back tomorrow. It's more than that. Halanas adin is not just that you have to wait till the next day. But rather, uvo biyom is davgen asanhedrin zugo zugos, la'ayin bedino. And then they assign them tchavrusos, or groups, doesn't have to be necessarily. That is, the Sanhedrin needs more time to deliberate. So that it's not just that they go home and do whatever you want to do and come back tomorrow. That's not the point. The point... Oh, that's what he says, yeah. U'mamayetin b'machol. And they have to, restrict themselves in terms of eating. V'ein shosin yayin kolos layom. They can't drink wine. In other words, they can't do activities which would cause them to be removed. Heschadas. From the case. V'nosin b'dava kol ha'layla. And they deliberate on the matter all night long. Kol echad v'yechad imzug shelo. Each and every person with his partner. Oh, imatzmo b'veso. It's interesting. That's chavrusa system. Each person had a chavrusa. So, but there are some people that would, they want to stay home and they want to learn by themselves. That's not a chiv to have a chavrusa. But it means each person should be involved all night long considering studying the case. And the next day, they come back to Bezdin. Hamazaka Omer Ani Hu Hamazaka Mazaka Nivim Komi. Okay. And the Mazaka says, I'm the Mazaka, and I maintain my position of schus. Hamachayev Omer Ani Hu Hamachayev Umachayev Ani Bim Komi O Chazarti Bi V'Ani Mazaka. As we've learned, the Mazaka can't change his position at this point. Because when they reconvene on the second day, it's still Masu Matan. So therefore, the Mazaka has to affirm that I'm the Mazaka, and I'm Mazaka in my place. And the Mechayev has to... Then the Mechayev can change his position. There's a formalized... It seems that there's a formalized Masu Matan which takes place in the Bezdin. It's done in a certain orderly fashion. People get up, and people have to listen, and you have Talmidim are brought to the front, and so forth. When you're in the Beis Din is convening, it's done in an organized fashion. When they adjourn for the night, so then there's still Masu Matan, but it's informal. Each person learns b'chavrus and so forth. Halana?
Yeah, the halana.
The main idea of halana is that to give more time to come up with a schus. Before you kill somebody, you've got to make an extra effort.
In general,
it's considered to be, to the contrary, it's good. We want to save his life. But then. So if we acquit him, and let's say we made a mistake, okay, it was a legitimate mistake, we're not concerned. That's not a problem as far as we're concerned. But if we convict him, it means we're going to kill him, and we made a mistake, that's a problem. We want to make it much more difficult to convict. And thus you need more time. He says, why is this? So questions being raised. So why do they adjourn altogether? Why not just continue throughout the night in a formalized way? Right? Could be that the answer is that by Dine Nefashos, Dine Mama, everybody, we just went through the sugya that Dine Mama is Maschilin Biyom V'Gomrim Balayla. Dine Nefashos is Maschilin Biyom V'Gomrim Bayom. So in terms of Bezdin, everything has to be Biyom. So once, what it would seem, once evening comes, it would seem that the Bezdin can't continue. That would be a violation. However, that's the formalized aspect of it. But the informal, that's a chiyuv on the dayanim. It would seem that this is a chiyuv on the dayanim to be osek in the masu matan kol halayla. Each one. Now, it also makes sense on a practical level is that there's two different forms. There's a formalized form in which you get together, and that has its advantages. But then also to get the maximum, you'll see people, then they like to go home, right? There's a formalized learning in the yeshiva, then there's learning you do in a relaxed, you go home. Firstly, you have to go home, people have to eat, whatever it is. They have certain things that, you know, you get tired. It's good to take a break and then return to the subject. That's an informal phenomenon. Also, each person, he can then sit down with his chavrusa. The truth of the matter is, the Rambam doesn't mention it. He says that, or the person can stay home and, you know, learn by himself. He could also learn with somebody else that's not even on the Sanhedrin. Let's say he has a chavrusa that's not on the Sanhedrin, is how he likes to learn with him. Or he has some talmidim. He gets his talmidim together, and he reviews up and back with them. That's also good. The Rambam doesn't have to mention every possibility here. You picture, okay? So now you see the Leficha. The Mishnah, the Mishnah is saying, because of this principle of Halanas Adin, we cannot begin a trial of murder and Dina Nefashos on Friday, Erev Shabbos, or Erev Yom Tov. That's what the Mishnah stated. So now the Gemara is going to analyze it. Why is that impossible? So the Gemara says, Maitama Mishum Delo Efsha. Simply, it's impossible. Hechi Le'Evad. Because now the Gemara is going to go through the scenarios. How could you do it? Obviously, you could start it on Friday. You could start it in Erev Yom Tov if it was going to be an acquittal. That's not a problem. Because you can start and you can conclude. That is not the problem. But you don't know when you start. When you start, it has to be at a time which is suitable for acquittal, but also what if you don't have acquittal? That's the problem. The whole problem stems from the fact that let's say you don't have a majority for acquittal and you have a majority for conviction, so then you're going to have to do halana. So the Gemara is going to show you that it's impossible then to work. Why not? Maitama mishum delo efsha. Hechi le'eva. L'dayne b'mar le'shapsa. V'ligmere l'dina b'mar le'shapsa. If you want to say that you're going to judge him on Erev Shabbos and conclude on Erev Shabbos, Dilma Chazu Tama L'Chava. But what if they're inclined towards guilt, towards conviction? Uba L'Mevad Halonas Din. And therefore they have to do Halonas Din. Okay, which would mean that they would have to come back on Shabbos. At this point, so the question arises, so what? Is there anything wrong with judging on Shabbos? That's the next step in the Gemara. So what? Let them start on Friday. Acquit, fine. If not, postpone till Shabbos. Come back together on Shabbos. It would seem that the coming back together and judging on Shabbos, as we'll see, is not the problem. But there is another problem. What does the Gemara say? V'ligmarei b'shapsa. L'dainei b'mali shapsa v'ligmarei b'shapsa. V'likdalei b'shapsa. Okay? So the Gemara is like this. The Gemara is playing out all aspects of the scenario. So assuming the worst now. We'll come back on Shabbos. We'll be gomer the din. Obviously, if you come back on Shabbos and you find fine for acquittal, again, there's no problem. There's no problem. But the question is about conviction. So we'll convict him. Now, once you convict him, you have to execute him. All right, so then the question is, can you execute him on Shabbos? Ein ritzicha doches ha-Shabbos. But the Gemara is saying is that this is an issur of ritzicha, obviously. To execute someone, it constitutes one of the 39 forms of malacha. All right, now the only question is, are you permitted to do it? Because this is a mitzvah. Sanhedrin has a mitzvah to execute. So the Gemara is saying is that it's not doches ha-Shabbos. So whereas the trial is not a problem on Shabbos, but the execution would be. Ein ritzicha doches ha-Shabbos. Okay, so that's why. Why? So now we've learned that you can't execute him on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "V'likdalei l'urta." Let us postpone it, conclude it on Shabbos, okay, and then we'll execute him at night. So the Gemara says, "No, neged Hashem hashbeinon," right? Hoka, right? So we just said the answer that you can't do it because then you'll be executing him at night. And we've already established that that it's a principle that the execution must be done by daytime. So therefore you can't do it that way. Get to the next step. Okay? Now the Gemara says, V'ligmarei l'dinei b'shapsa. So let's conclude the din on Shabbos. V'likdalei b'chad b'shapsa. In other words, now the Gemara is taking the next step. Okay? Start the trial Friday, conclude the trial on Shabbos. Okay? Then Shabbos night, make Havdalah, whatever it is. And then on Sunday morning, you'll have the execution. Wait 1 second, let me just state the case. So the Gemara says you can't do that either. You can't do that either. Why? Nimtza ata ma'ana es dino. It turns out that you're ma'ana the din. So Rashi, take a look at Rashi. L'dainei b'mali shapsa v'nigmarei b'chad v'chol zman shel nigmarei din. That's the next step. V'chol zman, because here the Gemara says that that would constitute inu hadin. Of course, the question is there a havamin over here? We've already learned the principle of inu hadin. Well, what's the? Is there any havamin that it wouldn't be? Is the Gemara just going through the possibilities, or is there really a havamin over here? Yeah, left obviously. The Gemara is considering all the possibilities over here. There's only one possibility that's left. That is, start on Friday. Okay? Now, if he's found guilty, do halana. But don't do halana to Shabbos. Don't reconvene on Shabbos. Can't reconvene on Shabbos because you're stuck. If you find him guilty on Shabbos, there's nothing you can do because you can't execute him. Can't execute him on Saturday night because it's neged HaShemesh. Can't execute him on Sunday because of Inu Hadin. Right? So now there's only one other possibility. Start on Friday. If you acquit, acquit. If not, postpone it to Sunday. Have Halonas Hadin, postpone to Sunday. Reconvene on Sunday. Reconvene on Sunday, and then there's no problem. If you convict, so you kill him right away. It's Neged HaShemesh. That's the next case. That's the next possibility. You follow? Takes up that point. See, now the Gemara's next issue is, and Rashi says, so what about postponing, make the second day Sunday instead of Saturday. Now the Gemara says, L'dainei b'malei shapsa, to judge him on Erev Shabbos, v'nigmarei b'chad b'shapsa. And the Gemara then should be a b'chad b'shapsa. V'chol z'man shalom nigmarei. Then Rashi says, so Rashi's, you might be concerned it's too long. The person's suffering too long. V'chol z'man shalom nigmar hadin, lo havi inu hadin. And as long as they haven't concluded the din, it's not a violation of inu hadin. The chol shah mitzapa la'atzala. Because he's still hoping for an acquittal. Avo kasha nigmar. But once it's nigmar, kalayom mitzapa la'misa. So now already he's just waiting for death. V'hava inu hadin. And that's inu hadin. V'nigmer b'chava shafza. So the Gemara says, minshu tamayu. That is, they will forget their opinions. They'll forget their ideas. In other words, it's too much of a break. That's interesting. Too much of a break between the first day. By that time already, it won't be fresh. They'll have forgotten what they said. Now they're going to ask the question, but what do you mean they'll forget? That's what we have the scribes. We have the stenographers, so to speak. Even though you have the two scribes, v'chosven, divrei hamazaken, v'divrei hamachayven, so well, what do you mean? They can read the record. Nehi debepuma katvin, liba de inchi inchi. Hilkach lo efsha. That minchi lehu tamayu, Rashi says, shanasu v'natnu v'diktiku b'yom rishon. All the work they did on the first day, all the ideas, the conclusions they came to, will be forgotten. Liba de inchi inchi. Liba de inchi lo ksivi, lo katvi. That is, you can write down... You can write down some some ideas, but you can't, all of the thoughts that are part of it, you can't write it down. Even though you can write down a note, you can have notes. The basic tam, nishkach mi libo yeshuva latamo, but there's a yeshuv latamo. There's the reasoning behind it and the factors which lead, you know. That's, you can't write that, all of that down. They just wrote down the result, the conclusion, the basic conclusion. This is what he said, but in a basic fashion. V'yein yachal li'ayishvo. And he can't defend it. L'osayis tam hagun kivirishona. Notes. If the notes are very brief, so they're useful because you're thinking about it and it's on your mind. Now you're getting up, you look at the note, you recall all the thinking because it's fresh. But if a few months go, time goes by, you look at the note, you're not, what was the reason? Why did I say that? So sometimes you remember, I had a good idea, I just can't remember, unless you have very extensive notes, or sometimes you have to go back, and listen to the tape again, and the notes have become too unrelated, that's what they're saying. It's saying like this, that there's too much of a absence, so that even though he can be reminded of his position. Yeah, you took this position, and for this reason. But now it's not so clear to him anymore. It's an interesting thing. Apparently, one day break is not, it's going to still be fresh. He won't lose it. But after that, he begins to lose it, and it's not as clear to him. I'll introduce to the question with another question. Let's ask another question. At Kan, we learned that you can't begin on Erev. Meaning, you can't begin at any time which, because of halana, would cause you to conclude on a Yom Tov or a Shabbos. Because then once you do that, it's impossible. You can't solve the problem. Either because of Neged HaShemesh or because of halana Sadin. So let me ask you a simple question. Can you begin a trial on Shabbos itself?
Should be absolutely.
Because the Gemara, the Gemara over here said... Apparently, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with judging on Shabbos. The Gemara never said that. Judging on Shabbos is okay, as long as you don't execute. But to get together, to convene, and to consider
whether that would be the case.
Right? It's not achana. Hold it. It's not achana or anything like that because it's necessary now. That's Bezdin. Bezdin's function is to do justice now. So there's no achana. You're involved in something which you need to do now. Now. The question is, can the Bezdin convene on Shabbos itself? Building up to something, I'm going to stop. It would seem that there's two issues over here. In terms of the Etzem, what they're doing, the being involved in the case, whether it's the Masu Matan, whether it's the interrogation of the witnesses, and so on and so forth, L'chora, it doesn't seem like there's a problem. Because that can, the Gemara never threw out the possibility and said, one second, Shabbos, You can't judge on Shabbos. It never said that. To the contrary, it said you could. It seems that you could. Now, so therefore, if that's the case, what about convening on Shabbos? So you have two things. One is the actual interrogation. The interrogation and the Masu Matan. But now Lou is mentioning, but there's a separate problem. And that problem is the Sofer HaDayanim. and the sofer had the yon, am I going to have to write? So it would seem that because of that, you can't convene on Shabbos because it's malacha. If that's the case, then I have a question. Huh. So, if that's the case, why is our Gemara giving all these problems, all these reasons why we can't start on Erev Shabbos? Because you might have to continue on Shabbos. And on Shabbos, you can't. Because of what? Because of the execution. But you can't have a trial on Shabbos at all because of the Sofer Hadayon. They have to write. Why did the Gemara simply say you can't do it on Shabbos because of the Sofer Hadayon? They have to write. The Gemara doesn't ever mention that. The Gemara has every permutation. It's all due to the fact that you may have to execute. You can't execute him on Shabbos. That's what you can't do. And you can't postpone the execution for the nighttime. And you can't do it Neged HaShemesh. Etc., etc., etc. And you can't because of Sunday, because of Inu Hadin. So that's it. But other than those things, for example, let's say you could execute at night. So then you would be able to start on Erev Shabbos. What about the Sofer HaDayanim? The Gemara in Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. Tashma, Shnei Sofer Dayanim Omdim Lefneihem. There are two Sofer Dayanim, scribes, stand in front of the Sanhedrin. Echad min hayamin v'yachad min hasmol. One on the right, one on the left. V'chos v'divrei hamazakin v'divrei hamachayvin. And they write down the words of the mazakin and the words of the machayvin. So there's a bishlam v'divrei hamachayvin. I understand why they have to write down the words, meaning the arguments of the Mechaivin, l'mocha chazu tam acharina, because tomorrow they might come up with a different reason, for chov, uboy l'mevat halonas din, and you're going to have to do a second halonas din, because each time for chov requires another halonas din. Take a look at Rashi, el bishlam adivrei hamachayvin, boy l'michtav v'yom rishon, you must write on the first day. And even though they can change their mind. Because on the second day you need to know the reasons for the mechayvim. Because let's say one of them changes from his original tam. And he is mechayv him on the second day for a different tam. Boy lemeheder. Umaboy halonas din b'tama basra. So then you have to have another halona for the second time. Ula yachzer b'halayla. Maybe he will change from it that night. Follow? So this idea of halona is not necessarily a one-time thing. It means for any time, l'chov requires a halona. So you write down the time. At this point, the Gemara wants to know, why do I need to know the time of the mezakin? Okay, well, whatever. But we're not concerned with that right now. But we've established that they must write down the tam of the mechayvim. Now, do the sofrim continue their function of writing on the second day as well? Well, it seems to me yes. Because first of all, if the mechayvim, let's say mechayvim, and he said that he retracts the tam from yesterday and he's mechayev for a new tam. Don't they have to write that tam down? Because they're going to reconvene on the third day. And then let's say he wants to change from that tam. He has another tam. I mean, it seems to me that means intrinsically. Also, as we learned, they have to write down the tam of the mezakin and so forth. They have to write. So on the second day, once there's going to be Masu Matan, the Sofrim are going to have to be there. Aren't the Sofrim going to have to perform their function on the second day? You follow what I'm saying?
Why
didn't the Gemara simply say, we can't? We can't have it on the side on Shabbos. You can't postpone it on Shabbos because intrinsically you can't have trial on Shabbos. Why? Because you can't have Ksiv on Shabbos.
Oh.
Yeah, it's true. Questions being raised that if that's the case, a trial can last more than 2 days then. So it could be 3 days, it could be 4 days. So, I mean, you can always bump into this issue. So what about starting on Thursday? Why don't we say you can't start on Thursday because you may have to postpone until Friday, and on Friday you may have to postpone it to Shabbos, and you can't postpone it to Shabbos. That's true, but that could happen anytime. The Gemara is saying that as in terms of establishing a starting point for the trial, you could say another thing. You could say another thing, so maybe they'll acquit him on Friday. The point is that the time for the convening of a trial must be a time where, all things being equal, it's possible. It's possible to conclude it properly. You see? It's possible. So if you're starting on Thursday, so it's possible. We're only dealing with the norm. In terms of the basic requirements of a trial, which is halana lamacha, and for conviction, and execution, which is neged HaShemesh, and not involving inui, right? So then, Friday does not qualify. But Thursday does qualify, because it's possible. So we're only concerned with the norm. If something else comes along, you know, that's a separate fact. Anything can come along. A trial, we're not assuming that the trial is going to go on indefinitely. There could be other postponements. There could be a snowstorm, whatever the case is. So we'll deal with that when it happens. You can always ask that question. What happens if a trial started on Tuesday and here it is Shabbos? And we have to postpone it until Sunday. We have no choice. So what do we do? I mean, did the Gemara say so in such a case? Because Minshei Tamayo, because they won't remember the reason so good, so therefore the whole thing is bottle? The Gemara didn't say that. We're merely talking in terms of the ideal. In order to be koveya, you have to be koveya at a time where it can be concluded without violating any of the basic principles. Okay, but if it was, you started on Tuesday and now it's Friday and we still haven't come to a conclusion, so we'll postpone it, whatever the case is. At this point in time, what we're saying is that you can't start the trial on Shabbos. Because you have Shnei Sofer Dayanim, and the trial is not Docha Shabbos. Just like the execution is not Docha Shabbos, so too the writing, Ksiva, is a Malacha. If that's the case, our question is, so why did the Gemara have to go through all these different factors of why it can't be postponed till Shabbos? It should have simply said it can't be postponed till Shabbos because you can't intrinsically have the Dinei any din on Shabbos, because you always have the Sofer HaDayanim. The answer that's being suggested is that basically the institution of Sofrim is essentially for the first day. Because the first day is when each person states his time and it has to be written down. And then when they reconvene the next day, so they're there just to read, to make sure that it's the same time. Now, it seems to me if somebody were to change his time, if somebody were to change his time and come up with a new time for Chov, it would have to be written down, it seems to me. But that is not an intrinsic. That's possible, but that's not part of the... In other words, the Gemara wants to explain why, given all the givens, you can't do it on... The Gemara, assuming there is nothing unusual, that would be unusual. Because pretty much, they put down their Tamim and so on and so forth. They come in the next day, and then they have the final deliberation for Chov. So the Gemara, now it's possible that you have a thing like that, and it's fine, and that would require a ksiva, and you can't write on Shabbos. But the Gemara wants to show you why, even if you didn't have that problem, from intrinsic reasons, that is the very phenomenon of halana and conviction makes it impossible by nature, even if you didn't, that would be an accidental phenomenon. You see, that would be an accidental phenomenon, that there was a change. In other words, we're assuming all the writing was done on the first day. You're not going to have any new writing. Okay? Assuming all that, and assuming that we came to the conclusion, we deliberated, and that's it, the vote is the same. That's what it wants to show you. What it wants to show you is that you can't do the Gemar Din. It wants to point out to you why it is that you can't do the Gemar Din on Shabbos. And the reason is because once you do the Gemar Din, then you're hooked into the rule of immediate execution. And then it shows you why it can't be. And then the only thing you'll say is, well, what about postponing it till Sunday? Okay, that's a Havamina. And the maskana is minshu tamayu, means that it's lacking in halana. Halana has to be to the very next day. It's lacking in vehitzilu. You'll tell me, so what about if they started on Tuesday, or they started on Thursday, and you have to postpone till Sunday? Yeah, then you will postpone till Sunday. But that's different. Because we're saying that factor of having to do a halana of 2 days, that's sufficient to prevent you from the actual kfiyas. You can't be kovei at a time where intrinsically you're going to have a halana of 2 days, where it's going to involve minchi tamayu. But if you were kovei on Thursday, so that's a good kfiyas, because it doesn't intrinsically require a halana of 2 days, because you could be malan es adin to Friday. You see, things happen in a trial and it does get postponed till Sunday. Yeah, but that didn't happen because of a failure in terms of when you were kovei. That just other circumstances took over. We're learning here in terms of kvius. The essential kvius must be at a time when it's possible to conduct it in the most optimum manner, which would mean a halana, and a halana must be to the next day. That's what the Gemara here is trying to show you. Okay? So that means, because of that, you can't be kovei the din on Friday. But you can be kovei the din on Wednesday or Thursday. And because there's nothing wrong with that kvius. That kvius is one which lends itself to a proper conduct of the trial in every aspect. The halana point must be where it's chal on the very next day. The halana. Okay? And thus, it can't be on Friday, because then you're going to be malon to Shabbos, and Shabbos is not conducive for a halonas adin. Well, this is really crucial. The question is, I mean, perhaps this is where the Gemara is introducing us. Until now, I didn't know about Inu Hadin. And now, the Gemara is telling you that there's a separate factor of Inu Hadin. And that is that, V'yahavta Re'echa Kamocha. Rashi says that Barar lo misa yafa, that once you, even though the guy's been found guilty and he's going to be executed, but it has to be done in the most, quote, humane way. That you can't increase any aspect of pain. Obviously, the fact that he's going to be executed, that you can't, you have to do. That's the punishment. That you can't think about that. So there's going to be a certain amount of inui hadin. There's going to be a certain amount of inu hadin, simply because whatever time it takes, a half hour, 40 minutes, whatever it is, that you can't. But anything which is additional, which you can control, then you're not allowed to do it. To summarize, the reason why we can't begin on Erev Shabbos is because of halana, and assuming that nothing changes, and on the second day they still have the majority of two for conviction, nothing's changed, then we're going to be stuck. Because once you convict, you must execute. We can't execute him on Shabbos. Can't postpone until Saturday night because of Negar HaShemesh. Can't postpone it until a Sunday morning because of Inu Hadin. Can't do a Halana from Friday to Sunday. Therefore, we can't begin on Friday. That's the case. That's the only reason why we can't do so. Have Halana and nothing changes. It's working by assuming that there is Halana and nothing changes. And now we have to actually have the Gemara din. But if everything changed, and they all said that we changed our minds, he's really innocent, then it's not a problem. Then fine, we can work it out. That's not the case. It's working on the, let's say nothing changed, and then we're forced to be Gomer the din. We can't be Gomer the din. That's the...
Not in trouble.
Yeah.